This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexual on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Triple Bypass. You are in fact on Joy 94.9, and my name is Anthony, and you are tuning into another Bipolycast. This is episode 6, and I have a very well-known person to the Triple Bypass show. It's one of our team members, Lou. Welcome to the Bipolycast.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Wonderful to be here.
And for those who don't know, Lou is a co-presenter on Triple Bypass as well as our podcaster.
From time to time, very talented. Very so talented. I'm told, yeah.
Yes, very bi in your skills.
Yeah, I can do two things and that's it.
Well, we are chatting about being bisexual and polyamorous on this particular episode. We're going to go through a couple of themes and common experiences that bi and poly people may experience from time to time in their relationships. And that's, I guess, Lou, just to locate ourselves, I identify as being the hinge person in a V setup. And in your poly setup is?
So my poly setup is a V as well. There was a term that we were chatting about earlier. Could you remind me what that was?
Metamore.
I am one of a metamore. I'm a metamore.
You are a metamore, a fabulous metamore.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I try. Not very hard, but I do.
Well, I wanted to go through some particular themes. I did a talk recently at the Mind Out Forum, which is a mental health practitioners network here in Melbourne. And Mind Out is the particular group of LGBTI practitioners or LGBTI inclusive practice practitioners. And I talked about being bi and poly in that space. And I forget, Lou, that even in queer spaces, the bisexuality and bi information can be very new for some people. And then poly stuff is really new for them as well.
Yeah, it's, it's hard to account for everyone's lived experiences and, you know, proximity to these kinds of communities and these kinds of issues. But it is something that I do have to constantly remind myself, like, oh, you know, this person might not necessarily know what I'm talking exactly about, or, you know, you can't exactly imagine how someone views your relationship and your setup because you have no reference for their experiences and their experiences with similar kind of themes and stuff.
Totally. And I think not having references, I think, but especially for people who are poly, I think, you know, if being bisexual wasn't inconvenient enough, being poly blows your fucking mind, I find, with some people. So we're going to try to sort of go through some of those things for people who are listening. And again, we're not going to define terms and come up with definitions on this show. If you want an extensive list on all sorts of poly configurations and relationship setups and terms, go to the PolyVic website. I want to start off actually with one definition, though. I said I wasn't going to, but I will. Robin Oakes, who's a bi con. No,
we love Robin.
Yes, and I want to start off with Robin's definition of bisexuality that goes, I call myself bisexual because I acknowledge that I have in myself the potential to be attracted romantically and or sexually to people of more than one sex and or gender, not necessarily at the same time, not necessarily in the same way, and not necessarily to the same degree. Probably the most gorgeous definition of bisexuality I know.
I would have to agree with that. It really kind of covers everything.
And it's a really good way of handing that to people to say, try that on, have a think about it, don't hurt yourself, but this is a really good definition. The only thing in there that says not necessarily at the same time, well, I do have relationships with people of different genders at the same time. Yep. So we're going to move into a bit talking about poly stuff as well. So bisexual people in poly relationships, I think that one of the things that bi people, that makes our experiences, I guess, different and unique in relationships is that we're probably the only sexual orientation that has to come out to our partners, regardless of their gender. Because, I mean, think about it. If you're a gay man and you go out on a date with another queer male, I guess the assumption is that you are both gay men. I know these days we tend to ask for people's pronouns and the way they define their queerness and that sort of stuff. But bisexual people tend to have to come out as bisexual in every space and every date we go on and every potential partner.
Yeah, especially because it's not something that can be coded, as, or rather the coding is blurred between other people coding themselves as gay or lesbian or in any other numerous of sexualities. But yeah, it's there's not as much of a clear line towards, I don't know, I don't really want to say being on the same page. But as you say, you do have to constantly kind of reiterate. Yeah, I think constantly coming out is
a thing for us.
It really is.
It is for bi and pan people. And I think one of the things that we have to then worry about when we come out to our partners is I know for me, is I scan my partner or potential partner's face for any sort of reactions that might indicate some biphobia. That's not me being sort of overly sort of cautious and paranoid about their response, but it's because we're used to having people say to us, oh, you're still going through that phase, are you?
Yeah, exactly. And having to come out as numerous times with numerous different people, I really think kind of reiterates that that vague kind of uncomfortableness in, you know, it's insidious in a way.
And really annoying.
Really, really fucking annoying.
It is. So coming out to partners can be problematic for bi people. And then I guess one of the things that I found, perhaps in my first poly relationship that I had, the very first date I was on with one of my partners, he knew I was bisexual, so that was okay. I was talking about the Triple Bypass show and some of the bi activism I've been involved in. But then telling him I was poly, that created the sort of response I usually get when you tell people you're bi, but the bi stuff was okay in that conversation. It was being poly that created some confused eyes and some questions and some suspicions.
Yeah, that's not an experience I can really relate to be perfectly honest. My experience, like this is still my first polyamorous relationship, so I'm still kind of, you know, I'm still exploring and learning everything about myself at this time, so I can't. I don't know. There's just something about having to constantly reiterate and define and explain my relationship to other people. Like, that's just another level of kind of exhaustion that I'm very uncomfortable to kind of constantly broach.
Totally, because we live in an anti-poly culture, and I say that deliberately because whenever I talk about being poly to non-poly people, there's a bombardment of questions and genuine curiosities. Yeah. But there's always this sort of scanning through what I'm saying to look for the deficit or the problem I have with commitment or something.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, why are you like this way?
Yes. I had a family member say to me once about being poly, they said, oh, you're just selfish. And I said, what do you mean selfish? Yeah. And they said, oh, you know, you want your cake and eat it as well. And I said, hang on, it's interesting that people use monogamy and a dyad relationship as the benchmark, as the standard from which everything is drawn from. And I thought, poly people are so not bloody selfish. That's one word that should not be used to describe. We work so bloody hard to meet needs and to incorporate needs and to respond to needs.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the complete antithesis, you know.
One of the other things I mentioned at this forum was I guess for bi people in relationships, I think for bi women or bi femmes in particular, there's a disproportionately high rates of sexual assault and intimate partner abuse that happens in those relationships. And that came from a study from Deakin Uni by Tyrrell Brown and Herman in 2017 that found bi women were another high risk group of people who are subjected to intimate partner violence. I think about, you know, the poly community, we don't often talk about intimate partner abuse or family violence as much as we do in mainstream, in straight hetero relationships. And I think about, you know, I'd like to do a future show on sort of exploring that. And I know there's an anxiety to go into those kind of discussions with poly relationships if we're worried about being viewed as problematic anyway.
Yeah.
Then drawing attention to the shitty stuff about poly relationships, just like any other relationship, can also be tricky.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we live in a patriarchal society where women are sexualized way, way, way more than men. And when you throw in all of these really toxic, like, heteronormative standards and monogamous standards as well, I really think that that's those contributing factors to these statistics.
Well, it is, and that's what the Deakin Uni, that's what the Deakin report found, that sexualization that, you know, women or femme people, I mean, queer people generally, but women in particular who are sexually objectified, but bi women in particular had this added layer of objectification because their bisexuality was fetishized, and then they were targeted with sexual assault as a result. And then there was some monitoring around social movements and the perpetrators' interrogation around who they're having sex with, because obviously bi people just wanting to have sex with anybody. So, you know, that's a joke, people, just to put that on record. So, yeah, so that's an interesting, that was an interesting study. But with bi, I read, and I don't have a reference for this, I'm sorry, but I did read somewhere else that bi men were the least likely to come out in the workplace and to family members than other people who identify as bisexual.
Yeah, I mean, I'm out to a few select co-workers who thankfully are queer as well.
But no, because I'm thinking bi men are the least likely to come out of the you know, LGBTI acronym, and there's something about breaking some sort of masculine script that exists for gay men anyway, but there's something about bi men being viewed as really being closeted.
Yeah.
And so they're not, you know, they're putting you on or something.
Yeah, do you think that's maybe because a lot of bi people are still kind of viewed as being like half straight and half gay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're already kind of halfway there.
Yeah, totally. That's another thing that bi people have to contend with when we come out to others is like, how gay are you and how straight are you? And how many of this gender have you been with and how many of that gender have you been with? And generally people impose the binary onto us that we're only attracted to either male or females. And there's not one bi person I know that would say that's true for them, that we are sexually and romantically and emotionally attracted to any gender. You know, we're measured on how gay or straight we are. One of the other points that came up, Lou, was that bi people in hetero-appearing relationships tend to have worse mental health than bi people in same-sex relationships or same-gender relationships. I thought that was an interesting finding. That's by Julia Taylor from the Who I Am study, La Trobe Uni, in 2018. So that study is exploring the reasons why. But I think it's an interesting thing for any bi person who's listening to this, who's been in a sort of relationship with someone of the opposite gender, I think would know a little bit about why that might be the case.
Yeah, I think so. There's always in the kind of back of my mind just the kind of that passive influence of a heteronormative, toxic culture. When you're in a hetero-appearing relationship, a hetero-passing relationship, maybe is that a better way to say it?
Sure.
Yeah, if you're in a hetero-passing relationship, then you're having those shitty heteronormative standards put onto you by default because that's part of the society that we live in.
Right.
When you're having these really awful standards imposed on you, of course you're going to react to it badly, you know?
Because our bisexuality gets lost. The presumption is that you're straight.
Yeah, the presumption is you're both cis and straight.
Yes.
And that's that's the classic relationship.
Yes.
The good old classic relationship.
Classic something. As bisexual folk, you know, and I do want to say up front, because I know a lot of bi people are not interested in polyamory, a lot of bi people have monogamous relationships, and also some bi people don't care for relationship in terms of intimate and sexual relationships, and that's fine too. But, you know, the bi community and the poly community do have a lot in common. And I know for me, I did ask myself the question, you know, why monogamy? And I think in my 20s, I was in monogamous relationships, dyad relationships. And then I got to my 30s and realized that I could never really feel like I was able to fully show up to my relationships with just one other gender. And when I heard about polyamory, I thought, sweet, I'll give this a go. And I think now my relationship with two other partners who are of different genders, there's something more full about the way I experience love and intimacy and connection and family life. and you know, that's just me. I mean, people can experience that fullness just with one partner, but I choose not to. And I think that's what's great about polyamory for me as a bi person.
Yeah, I can really empathize with that. There's something very fulfilling about I don't know, creating a secure and I don't know, like a safe environment. You almost have like a little community. There's something very comforting and, yeah, very fulfilling about that. I don't know. It's just better. I don't know. Having the opportunity to not only be in a fulfilling relationship with one person who I love very deeply, and also cultivating a relationship with a person who is close to me as well. Like, that is a really fantastic opportunity for personal growth, for learning about yourself, how to, as you were saying before, people in poly relationships do so much work in terms of communication, maintenance, and supporting each other. And although that is a lot of work, it also comes with a certain, I don't know, kind of emotional development and self-discovery.
Yeah, and lots of benefits and rewards, I think, putting all that work in. And I like what you said about having a community, because a poly relationship can feel like a community. There is more than two people involved in the relationship, and there are multiple people thinking about the multiple needs and about how that gets negotiated.
Yeah, I think negotiation is a very great word to use for that, because that's what you're doing. You're being mindful of other people's needs. You're examining what, you know, resources you have to improve everyone's kind of, I don't know, well-being of life, quality of life. It's something that feels a lot bigger and more important than a monogamous relationship in some ways, at least in my personal experience.
Totally. And this idea about ownership and entitlement to what you expect from your partner and the expectations that you take into monogamous relationships, for me, and I can't speak for others, but for me, I felt like a lot of that was challenged, and I had to revisit and review some of my belief systems around relationships, because I did go into relationships having lots of entitlement and expectations around what my role and my partner's role was in relation to our bond, and being a cis white male, the added layers of entitlement there. But I think the poly space is what's really allowed me to revisit some of this stuff and to be more mindful and careful about what I bring to relationships in terms of entitlement.
Yeah, and I do just want to reiterate that this is definitely in mind to our relationship with polyamory and monogamous relationships. We're not just sledging on monogamous people.
Sorry, all those monogs.
Yeah. But I think what's important that we are addressing is the toxic ideals which surround a lot of monogamous relationships and a monogamous culture.
Thank you for that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just so no one adds us on Twitter.
I don't want to lose any friends after this podcast. But there is a dissatisfaction with monogamy for people who step into the poly space, and that's okay. And I think that it's great that we're offered this model. But this model means that we break normative relationship scripts, which means that we start to upset people. We start to upset a system and a structure that's supported by institutions and laws and customs and social norms. Like, why would anyone want to be poly?
I'm glad you asked.
Because seriously, we do agitate people's thinking about intimacy in relationships.
We really do. I mean, you know, the idea of having a monogamous partner is it's the kind of ideal that everyone's expected to follow pretty much almost universally. When, you know, you're upsetting that's a very kind of uncomfortable thought for a lot of people.
It is, because the discomfort is against cultural and systemic messages about what a relationship looks like. We look at music, TV, movies, billboards, posters, everywhere that we have representations of relationships, it's usually between two people. So there's often a lot of family disapproval. I know there has been for me, Lou. And Lou, are you out to your family or family of choice or biological family of origin people about being poly?
So I'm out to my parents, maybe a couple of cousins. I don't know. I've got quite a bad memory sometimes. so maybe. But I'm out to both my parents.
How'd they go?
They're honestly really great. My parents are very good at taking everything in their stride. So, actually just came out as poly to my dad, not last week, but the week before.
Wow.
So, this is actually quite fortuitous.
Oh, wow.
He lives in Tasmania, so I went over to visit him. I told him, and it was just, yeah, completely taken in stride. Just kind of like, all right, as long as you're happy and you've kind of given a thought into where this kind of packs your future or blah blah blah, as long as you're happy to go ahead, go for it.
Good answer, Dad.
Yeah, I was like, thank you. And it was not that I expected it to kind of be an issue because he's chill as hell.
Nice. Can I give your dad's number to my parents?
Yeah.
Get him to talk to them?
Yeah, you can stay with them in Launceston for a week. Sure they'd chill out.
But that may be or may not be a common story for poly folk, but we do worry about and prepare ourselves for family disapproval. I know I was told that I wasn't to bring both partners to a family function, not together, not at the same time, because my nephews and nieces were, inverted commas, too young. I knew they were teenagers.
Mm.
So, and then having to explain that to partners and then choosing one partner or just choosing not to go to the family function creates some tensions.
Yeah, and whilst I did have a really good interaction with both my parents, that is still something that I'm dreading to... Well, not dreading, but it's an element of anxiety having to, you know, go over the same things and trying to, you know... to deal with these same kind of judgments that are probably going to be put on.
So some of the questions from family members might be sort of who's who in the zoo, right? Like, you know.
Those words specifically, yeah.
Those words specifically. Yeah. But, you know, I think as a person who's a hinge and I have two partners who are not in a relationship with each other, but they are in a relationship with me and I'm devoted to both of them. So our arrangement is that I don't have an interest in seeking other partners, but I have my cis male, cis female partner, and that's where my devotions lie. My male partner has negotiated and explored non-monogamy with me, not necessarily polyamory from his end. He doesn't want to be in other love relationships. And my female partner is not interested in exploring other partners at this stage, especially, I think, because we've just had a baby and we're very focused on parenting. So some of the questions I get asked a bit is, so who's who and what's the hinge, what's a metamor, what's a V, and primary and secondary partners is language that comes up a lot. And this has created some issues for us, particularly with parents. It's the power of biology. You know, if you're a biological parent, we have institutions and, again, a culture that legitimizes your role in this child's life. And my other partner, who's a non-biological caregiver, doesn't have that backing. And I didn't realize the gravity and weight of that until we actually had a child.
Well, I mean, I'm very much curious to hear your experiences on this, because this isn't something I can really relate to on many levels, to be perfectly honest.
Well, we did use language like non-hierarchical polyamory, where we tried to our best to ensure that everyone's needs and positions were legitimate and take it seriously and carry the same weight in terms of how it was factored into decision making.
Mm-hmm.
But once we had a child, that changed actually, and sort of the two biological parents in our setup became sort of the primary sort of relationship that took a lot of the resources, time and energy and focus, because those two parents, myself and my female partner, had to be very focused on our son, who's just a delight. And so my other partner was trying to find ways to step in, when to step out, when to give space, when to ask for some time.
Negotiating and ensuring that people's needs are met and ensuring that their needs are met as well.
Yeah, and that they're not forgotten.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think that's the thing that you mentioned earlier about how hard we work to try and negotiate needs and be respectful of everyone else's needs. There's a lot of thoughtful, deliberate care taken.
Yeah, I really like the term deliberate care, actually. That's a very good way to put it. That deliberate factor, consciously choosing when to step out, when to step in.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of coupling that with just, you know, the natural intimacy with the partner as well. Like, that's one of the really great and really rewarding things about polyamory.
Totally. And so the deliberate care has meant for us that we make those conversations explicit, that we let each other know that I'm aware of how hard you're working when you're not in the same room with us to provide that space.
And yeah.
So there's this sort of way that we sort of affirm and acknowledge how hard everybody's working, because just by virtue of being in a poly relationship, you're working bloody hard.
Yeah, and you get real good at communication.
Yeah.
That's something that I've been able to take outside of my relationship as well. You know, when you're able to, I don't know, not necessarily to critically think more about things, but yeah, being able to recognize and respond to different people's needs and stuff like that. It's something that you can, or that I find I've been able to take outside of my relationship and apply it to other, whether it's a platonic friendship or something like that.
Anne Hunter, and go to joy.org.au/triple bypass, and you can find all our bi-polycast episodes there, but also every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. to tune into the gang. Anne Hunter, who's been on previous podcasts, says that very thing, Lou, about monogamous people, or traditionally monogamous people, have come and had a go at polyamory and realized poly's not for them, but have gone back to monogamous relationships feeling more skilled and more mindful and more aware around how to incorporate needs and have those negotiated conversations. So you can really skill up, I think.
I completely agree.
I guess just a take-home message for non-poly people on that one. Don't ever refer to anyone in a poly relationship as the third wheel, because that's something one of my partners heard a couple of times after our son was born. It's just so hurtful and such a misconception about what it means to be poly.
Yeah, it seems very condescending. Don't do it.
Don't please. Do it.
Don't do it.
Yes. We do have do's and don'ts.
Yeah. Yeah, there are rules.
So some of the common poly relationship, I guess, struggles, if we talk about some of the, because we talk, you know, there's a lot of good things about being poly. Some of the struggles is that, and this is what's come up, I think, especially with our son as well, is that the couple privilege. You know, if you are a metamorph, perhaps walking into an already pre-existing couple relationship, that sometimes that person, hopefully they don't get called a third wheel, but that new person to that poly couple, for that to become a triad, and again, not necessarily everyone romantically involved with each other, that individual may find it difficult to advocate for their needs and for some time, because couple privilege is a thing. There's a lot of weight there. It has a lot of leverage, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. When I was introduced to, or rather when I was exploring polyamorous relationship with my current partner, introducing the metamorph was interesting, and it was almost like, and this is definitely not everyone's experience, it was almost like introducing two cats to the same house. you've got to keep your mind open, and they're going to, you know, there's going to be some tension at first, and a lot of that is, you know, just generalized anxiety or relationship anxiety, or you know, any of the thoughts that any rational human has at any given point in the day. But you learn to coexist, and you gradually get better at negotiating these needs. And
so the trickiness happens when there's a pair within the relationship set up, where there's a pair who get to have their particular relationship looked after with time or whatever, and one person feels like they're missing out, even though it's not missing out, it's just how time is being allocated.
Yep.
But one of the common things that metamorphs often talk about is the managing jealousy or disconnection. Jealousy might be a very sort of initial big feeling that gets experienced, and then, you know, as poly people, we start to have very open and explicit conversations about jealousy. The sting may feel like it's taken out of that emotion, and then it might just be about managing disconnection or not being with that partner. For metamorphs,
do you get asked if you get jealous at all as a hinge?
I get jealous because just as a human being who experiences that emotion.
Just as a person with emotions, yeah.
But I think in terms of my poly relationship, I often wonder, and it's really helpful for me to hear about my partners to talk about jealousy. I mean, very early, one of my partners would say, I struggle with the idea of having to share you. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting that's like for me to hear. I don't have to share my partners necessarily with any other love partners because they don't. I mean, for them to have non-monogamous sex away from me, that's a different feeling. I don't feel jealous. I don't really, I mean, with my male partner, that's something that I've just felt like it's taken the heat off me, to be honest, because my libido's not great these days. So, but I guess...
Taking one for the team.
But it's, but jealousy as a hinge is not something I have to grapple with as much.
Yeah, you know? I mean, because overwhelmingly, the biggest question or the most frequent question I am always asked is, oh, don't you get jealous? Or, you know, how do you deal with being jealous? It's jealousy is natural. It's not great, but it's natural. You know, anger is natural.
Yes.
It's not necessarily great, but it's a natural thing. It's not something that you can ignore. You've got to know it, and you've got to kind of create a relationship with it so you can better understand and kind of subvert it.
Totally. And do you find that when people ask you about jealousy, that in some way they're trying to indicate that, ah, because you feel jealous, there you are, the problem is polyamory. You shouldn't feel jealous. Poly's a problem.
Definitely sometimes it's either that or people just kind of accepting that jealousy should be a part of all relationships. There's, you know, the kind of trope, I guess, of, you know, monogamous people in a monogamous relationship being, you know, jealous of someone who's more attractive and younger. And I think it's these kind of really toxic ideals which support the normalization of jealousy as part of a relationship.
Mm.
And I think having to confront that in a polyamorous relationship is...
It happens just more readily, doesn't it?
It happens more readily, but you also have so many more skills... Oh, you're so much more skilled at dealing with it,
right?
You know, it's just better,
right? I love that.
It prepares you for dealing with it more. Rather, I think that's a better way of putting it.
And I guess that's common for metamors. What's common for the V person or the hinge person is guilt. And I hear other people who are in the V position or the hinge position to experience guilt. And I won't speak for others, but for me. Because I know that, say, one partner might feel like, you know, we haven't spent enough time together or, you know, the time that we have spent has felt rushed. We haven't been able to sort of extend that time to really nurture our bond. And for me to sort of turn away and go towards my other partner to go sort of to their place or whatever, because I know there's that worry around disconnection and not having enough time to nurture and strengthen the bond here, and then I'm going over there. Guilt is something that I experience a bit, managing guilt, you know, and I think that's something that sort of somehow drives my decision making around when I advocate for my time with this partner versus that partner.
I have heard, or not her heard, my partner who is the hinge has communicated very similar things, like this is a common theme,
yes,
among hinges, and a lot of the emphasis tends to be put on the metamors having to, I don't know, it's almost like they have to deal with the same person, so there's a commonality. hinges have to, dealing with that allocation of time and management of, you know, not only your now it's, you're negotiating twice the needs, but you're also trying to manage yourself.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.